The views and comments expressed on the Space Show by its guests, callers, and listeners belong to them. The Space Show and its hosts serve only as a platform and are not responsible for others' comments or views. All topics discussed on the Space Show are primarily for educational purposes.
We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other thing.
It's
the Space Show with Dr. David Livingston, broadcasting for 7 continents, consistently bringing you quality news and interviews with the best and brightest minds in the new space economy. Here is the founder and host of the Space Show, the man who best articulates the vision of space commercial enterprise, Dr. David Livingston.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to a very special edition Thursday evening of the Space Show. I'm your host, David Livingston. Thank you very much for tuning in. A couple of quick announcements before we get into our program with our two guests tonight. First is as this is a special Thursday evening show, we're on the 60-minute format. So if you do have a phone call that you would like to make to either or both of our guests that I will introduce in just a minute, or you want to give us an email, please make sure you get it in while we're still on air. Don't do it and wait so long that we're already off the air with the program. Both of our guests are on cell phones, so note that you may hear a little strange audio from time to time. Something that we never really get used to, but it's always there with a lot of cell phone calls. And don't forget that this is a talk show. So that means we do like to talk rather than just get your email. So our toll-free number is 1-866-687-7223. And there are no call screeners, so just be patient and I'll bring you up on air as quickly as possible. And then we do have the current website newsletter posted on our website. Check that out. Make sure you scroll down and you can see the program scheduled between now and the end of the year. Everything we do is archived, so you can easily download shows or you can listen right off of our website. We do have a store. The holiday season is coming up. And if you're interested in space show logo wear for your favorite space cadet or space person or space show listener, our store is a great place to find some items. So just find over on the right side the picture of Pepper listening to the space show, and Pepper will guide you to our Cafe Press space show store. Upper left, there is a very important menu called Listen Live. So this button tells you how to listen to the live formatted shows like we're doing right now. The podcasting shows and some of the podcast players are embedded on our website, and also MP3s on our website archives. So we are in TuneIn. We do Alexa. We're in iHeartRadio as well, iTunes. As I understand from Android users, all of the Android podcasts can get the Space Show podcast. Just search for the Space Show. And then we're in Apple Podcast on the iPhone platform and also Overcast. So if you have any questions about our podcast, please let me know. The best way to do that is email drspace@thespaceshow.com. A couple of other quick things I want to point out to you is that we are a 501c3 nonprofit with onegiantleapfoundation.org, and we are listener supported, which means we're able to bring you this programming because you, the listener, financially support the Space Show. So those of you that do contribute and support us, we certainly do appreciate it. Those of you that will be supporting us, we also certainly appreciate that as well too. And if you are a U.S. federal taxpayer, you do get a tax deduction for your gift. The same is true as a California taxpayer. So you can get more information at our website for our nonprofit, onegiantleapfoundation.org. And you can also email me, drspace@thespaceshow.com. There is a PayPal button on our homepage, and it's over on the upper right side. This tells you how to contribute electronically to the Space Show. Plus, if you're interested in sending a check rather than doing something through PayPal, it gives you the information for who to make the check payable to and our mailing address. And we also are part of the Amazon nonprofit family. They have two great programs for nonprofits, and we're registered with them with One Giant Leap Foundation. So if you click on the big Amazon button, pretty much in the center of our homepage, it'll take you to our Amazon page, and it will tell you about each of our Amazon nonprofit programs. For the most part, if you shop and buy things at Amazon, and you do it through the One Giant Leap portal or the Smile site for One Giant Leap, they donate a percentage of your purchase price to the space show. This is a very easy way to be supportive of the space show while just doing your normal routine Amazon purchasing. And we're certainly appreciative of those Amazon programs. We also have sponsors. We're getting ready to take new sponsors for 2020, and they're limited because sponsor messages take up airtime and talk time from our guests. So on the 60-minute formatted programs like tonight, we give a shout-out to our sponsors. But on the longer programs, we read the sponsor message, which is 60 seconds or less. So as this is a shorter program, I want to give a shout-out to Northrop Grumman, the Space Foundation, AIAA, MoonWords, the Space Development Network, Celestis, the National Space Society, and the Integrated Space Plan. And we would not be doing this program without our great sponsors. So do remember, they get a banner ad that goes across our homepage. They can change that banner ad whenever they want. And then they, on the longer programs, they get their sponsor message read on air on each program. And tonight, I'm very, very happy to bring back to the program my very, very dear friend, the person who really is responsible for me having become an adjunct professor at the University of North Dakota many, many moons ago, Dr. Eligar Sade. He hasn't been on the show for about 2 years, I guess, something like that. And it's good to be back in touch with him. And he has started something called the Astropolitics Institute, which we will talk about. And his partner in the Astropolitics Institute is Layla Martin. So briefly, Eligar is an aerospace pro, and he is the founder and president of Astro Consulting International. He is an editor of the academic journal Astropolitics and an adjunct professor and teaches courses in astrophysics, aerospace engineering, tech development, project management, and astropolitics. You can read his entire bio, the universities and the places he's taught at, and many of the things that he has accomplished in his life, by going to our website. His full bio and current bio is now posted. And as I said, he recently founded the Astropolitics Institute with Layla Martin to promote the space discipline. So Layla Martin is a master's degree candidate in international relations at Harvard, and she's going to graduate, I guess, in 2021. Her research focus includes space as a strategic asset, LEO and medium Earth orbit boundaries conditions, satellite security, and dual-use technology. She's the former creative director in the International Relations Department at Warner Brothers Entertainment, and she oversaw 32 international offices and collaborated on many projects, including Harry Potter and Lord of the Ring franchises, The Sopranos, The Kubrick Collection, and the reinvigoration of the MGM Turner catalog. And there's more about her as well. So you can read all about Layla Martin on the Space Show's website, as her bio is posted too. So Eligar and Layla, we welcome you to the Space Show. And Eligar, why don't you start out and introduce us to the Astropolitics Institute?
Yeah, thanks, David. Yeah, appreciate coming back on. Good to be on the Space Show again. Yeah, so as you mentioned in the introduction, you know, Layla and I launched the Astropolitics Institute. And the idea is to really promote and advance the discipline of astropolitics. Astropolitics really encompasses civil, commercial, private, military space activities throughout the world. And it's really broad, very interdisciplinary, because it really addresses the historical, strategic, political, bureaucratic, organizational, environmental, legal, economic, commercial, and business factors. Very, very broad. I mean, one way we kind of thought about it is it really encapsulates the ecosystem of space that really supports and provides for all the engineering, technology, and space programs and projects that do exist. And the intention of the Institute was to kind of really bring kind of a lifelong effort I've had in my professional career and the interest that Lila's had as well in this area to really, you know, develop an umbrella organization. This is set up as a nonprofit to really bring about collaboration, cooperation among all those who are working in the field of astropolitics, and to really advance three major pillars that are related to the organization. One is advocacy, really promote the discipline and get more attention to the discipline, you know, because these are things that are really, really important. If we're going to become a spacefaring species and we're going to establish lunar bases and lunar colonies and advance to Mars and continue on with our journey of space development and exploration, addressing, you know, all the social, political, socioeconomic, and social legal factors becomes very, very critical. And really to get more collaboration going on among kind of those desperate communities that are engaged in that right now. The other two aspects that we're putting forward deal with education, where we really want to advance education in the field of astropolitics, both at the professional development level for working professionals as well as in the university college areas. And thirdly, to bring about greater collaboration in the area of research, advanced research in the areas of astropolitics, one being centered around the journal I edit, Astropolitics, as well as advancing research, the research grant activity in the field itself.
Is this already being done by others? Are you unique? Are you putting it all under one roof? Help us see it in the context of today's space industry.
Well, this is not being done in any collaborative or cooperative way. Right now, there are parts and pieces of this being done either by individual academics, individual professors. There are some organizations that deal with aspects of astropolitics, like the International Institute of Space Law, which has a very active activity in parallel with the International Astronautical Congress, where we're going to be launching this next week. But really, there's consulting organizations, but really there is no overall collaborative forum for advancing, you know, the field of astropolitics.
Where are you physically located?
Well, we're registered, I live in Colorado, so registered in Colorado. The physical location is, in terms of registration of the nonprofit, is through Colorado. However, we're existing as an umbrella organization. We want to have visibility at, you know, major space venues and congresses.
Listeners, their website, if you would like to take a look at it, follow along with us, and maybe have added questions or inquiries based upon their website, is Astropolitics Institute. That's all one word, .org. And so you can open that up as we're going on. Layla, so you don't come from a space background. How did you get involved in this? And did you already know Eligar? Did you meet him through a space event? Sort of introduce yourself into this, please.
Well, first I just wanted to thank you for having us on the show. This is really exciting because Eligar and I have been working together for the last year in order to launch the Astropolitics Institute. And we are going to have a launch party next Tuesday at 8 a.m. at the Henley Park Hotel in Washington, D.C. We will be in Washington, D.C. for the International Astronautical Congress. We'll be promoting the event all day on Monday, the 21st. And as you said, you can find out more online. We're at astropoliticsinstitute.org. In terms of your question, why would a woman from a non-science background be here? How did I get here? Especially, I was a creative director at Warner Brothers. And so, long story short, I resigned to have kids in 2005 and went back to school. And so I have a background in international relations, and I come from a creative background. And when I was at Harvard, I was asked, what are you going to study? What is your plan? And I just said, I don't know, because there's so much I'm learning that once I stumble upon it, I'll know that it's the right thing. And so I was collaborating on a project with a colleague of mine who also has a professional position at the Pentagon. And he shared this idea with me that space is not as finite as we believe, and that geostationary Earth orbit is very lucrative and narrowly defined, and that low Earth orbit and medium Earth orbit are not. And so who cares? Why does that matter? Well, because satellites affect pretty much everything we do every day. And so as I started to read, I found a book by Everett Dolman, and I just became more and more interested in the field, and I was surprised at how important these different issues are, and how I'd never heard of it, and no one I had knew had heard of it, and it's not a major in a university. You don't get a degree in the subject, and it's just taught as a subsection right now in international relations. And I contacted Everett Dolman, and he was gracious enough to respond to my emails and all my tons of questions. And so we went back and forth for about 6 months, and I asked if I could interview him. He agreed. And I flew to Air University, where he's located, and began collecting footage for a documentary short. So I sort of melded together my background in entertainment, making films and movies, and then this new discipline that I had discovered and I was really excited about. And so in terms of a very easy way for how I explain to people what I study, because it can get very detailed and you could talk a lot about it, as I just say, I study, it's kind of the intersection of politics and space, but the easier way to think about it is all the things that are have to do with space that are not the science part. So boundary conditions, space governance, military trends and developments, privatization of space. So then they get it. They go, okay, there's a lot happening. That's not necessarily the science part. So
do you also include the technical part too, like the engineering, or is that included with the science part?
Well, yeah. I mean, for me, I'm not a science background. I'm not a technical engineering background at all. But there's a lot of really critical issues. I do study security, and so that's how I got into it, in the satellite security and the orbital debris issue, which I can talk more about later. But I think that it's important to note that there's a lot of space for women that are not scientists in this field. And I think that's really exciting, that you don't necessarily have to have a PhD in, astrophysics or something like that. And with that kind of background, but you still, there's a lot of relevance. There's a lot of, I think actually it's really interesting. Eligar and I talk a lot about how I have such a different perspective. And so I bring a completely different frame of reference in some of these problems, because we have really different backgrounds, and how that works well.
You have an initial email from Todd in San Diego, and Todd says, please clarify, I'm not quite sure I'm understanding something. What exactly is the Astropolitics Institute going to do? Are you planning to teach people, consult? What are the services? What are the products you're offering? If it's a nonprofit, what are people getting for their donation? Anyone, either of you, or both of you?
Well, I could jump in. Now, that's definitely a very good question. As I mentioned, we're a forum or an umbrella organization to bring about collaboration and cooperation among experts in the field of astropolitics. And as Layla was mentioning, we want to broaden out the demographics as well. So we want to bring in people that have not the usual background in aerospace. Such as Layla, we want a better inclusion, better gender diversity, ethnic diversity. So we're looking to broaden out and bring in more people into the sphere of astropolitics. And we have the advocacy part. I mean, I'll let Layla speak to that some more. But two other things that I'm kind of heading up, because Layla's more heading up the advocacy part of it, is on education and research. So we're looking to be a hosting organization for educational courses in astropolitics itself. I have developed over the course of my career, you know, textbooks and literature and university level and even graduate level instruction in the field of astropolitics. So I have developed a very sound gateway course. So it'll be kind of the first course that we're going to offer through the Institute, both for professional development of aerospace professionals, those working at the managerial level that need to be more attentive to these issues, as well as partnering with universities and colleges with this astropolitics course. And then we're looking to partner then with experts that would teach different aspects of astropolitics beyond the gateway course, you know, such as the governance of space that was mentioned earlier with Layla's talk, entrepreneurship in space, looking at military space issues, space power issues, et cetera. And there's a whole set of issues that we could focus on with individual courses. So we're looking to be a hosting entity for those courses and providing that service. And then thirdly, to be a forum for collaboration at the research end, to be able to collaborate on research activities and to be a vehicle for that, to seek grant monies, to work with other entities that provide those grant monies to advance research in the field of astropolitics.
So could individuals take classes from the Astropolitics Institute, for example?
Yeah, that's the intention. We essentially would be the hosting organization, and then those classes would be taught by, you know, the individual experts that partner with the Institute.
Okay. Todd, if you have any additional questions or want anything more, I know you always email. You've never called the show once, but email us, and if you have more to inquire, let us hear from you. Layla, what is your, how have you divided the task, I'm going to use that word, or the responsibilities might be better, between yourself and Eligar? So, for example, some of the course titles that he mentioned, or some of the research opportunities, what type of research, what type of courses would you be working with as opposed to Eligar, or am I missing something?
No, not at all. I think, at first, thank you, Todd, for your question, and thank you for listening. In terms of splitting it in tasks, that's how we think about it. So my role within the Astropolitics Institute is advocacy, and we're focused on advocacy and promotion of the field. And so I am creating a documentary short. In fact, at the Henley Park Hotel, I'm going to be filming short interviews with the attendees. The name of the documentary short is Astropolitics, the Most Important Subject You Know Nothing About. We have the movie poster up on the website if you guys would like to see it. But keep in mind that right now it's just Eligar and myself, and so we're not a very large organization, and we're working on this a lot. During the Henley Park Hotel interviews, I'm going to be speaking to experts on issues like space and global climate change and space governance and so forth. And so what my role in putting together this documentary short, I'm really trying to help regular people that don't know anything about this get excited and learn more about, you know, how space and space instruments affect so many different aspects of our lives. Because with that, we can do grant writing and I can raise funds for the other things. I look at it like this. Eligar has spent his life writing these amazing books and textbooks, and he has this whole, you know, book of information. And so the books are there and he's an expert. But so what do we need to do? It's we need a publicist for the discipline. And so that's my role within the Institute, is helping us get that funding, because the more people that are not science background, just, you know, regular people or people in the entertainment industry or what have you, then we grow and we expand. And that's really our goal. So.
structurally, are you already a 501c3, or is that pending?
It's pending because we, Eligar and I, have been putting all of our time into this Henley Park Hotel launch party and celebration, and putting together the different aspects of building out just our website and what we want to focus on, and, you know, what we're planning on doing. And because both of us have, I'm still a full-time graduate student at Harvard, and I have four children, and so this is not our full-time job, and we're just working together on a regular basis to try to just build it out.
Are your kids old enough to be space cadets yet?
They are definitely space cadets. They're really excited about this. They have heard me talking about it for a long time, and they're really excited. They're all listening tonight. So, hi, guys.
Maybe they can call in and tell them what's rubbed off on them. So this event, so I'm unable to attend the Congress, the IAC in Washington, D.C. So I'm assuming the Henley Park is one of the hotels near the event. I mean, tell us something about the event. And I'm also assuming anybody and everybody is invited, that they don't have to have a specific, like, invitation from you or something in hand, correct?
Nothing in hand, but yes, anybody and everybody that is attending the IAC, or, you know, has some experience, not just random people.
I can imagine what you'd have if you were doing this in L.A. or San Francisco, and they knew there was free food there.
Exactly. So the Henley Park Hotel is 3 minutes from the convention center, and so Eligar and I spend a lot of time thinking about, well, so if there's such a great program at the IAC, why would you leave to come to our party? So the first thing that we're going to be offering is a champagne toast to celebrate the launch of the Astropolitics Institute. So that's a good thing at 8 o'clock in the morning. Then we're also going to have some sort of breakfast, you know, type refreshments. And the event is going to be an opportunity for the attendees at the IAC to make meaningful connections with experts and learn about the Institute and get published in the academic journals Astropolitics and Space Policy. And so what we're trying to, you know, the IAC is huge. I think it's like 10,000 exhibitors or something. It's a little overwhelming, and we kind of want to cherry pick the people that are in our field where we can all get together and talk and figure out how we're going to collaborate, and they'll get published and maybe introduce their work in this documentary so that they're getting a lot out of attending the IAC.
Just to add to that, yeah, quickly, David, because Layla gave a great explanation of that. You know, we're reaching out to a lot of different groups. We're promoting this throughout the International Astronautical Congress, including the Space Generation Group, which are the young working professionals. We want to reach across the board intergenerationally. And throughout all the contacts and efforts I have in the field of astropolitics, you know, those working in this area, I've reached out to all those groups. You know, we have, we've been alluded, you know, we've been advertised to the different media outlets of the IAC, as well as, you know, looking to the different corporations and exhibitors there and national space agencies, because this is a global space event. For those listeners who don't know, the International Astronautical Congress has been around for 7 years. It's a nonprofit started out of Paris, France. They travel the world. They're an international forum, a global forum for the space field. And it's unusual to have this conference in the United States. This is a great opportunity then to be here in Washington. You know, they have the conference in the U.S. and for us to attend and promote this.
I have another listener email for you. Terry is in Chicago. And Terry says, if we believe that we have a particular expertise, is there a way that we can participate as one of the experts in your new institute?
Sure.
And
yes.
Well, tell them how you do that. What are you looking for people? How do they get a hold of you, or what?
My email address is star@astropoliticsinstitute.org. So just email me.
Okay. do they teach classes? I mean, what do they do? Do they work on research papers? Like if they said, I wanted to research da-da-da-da-da, whatever, and you agreed to that, do they get paid to do research? I mean, help them understand.
No.
What do they do? Okay.
Right. So not at this time. I think if somebody already has established, published in the industry and they just want to have more people know about their work and be a part of the academic journals, Astropolitics and Space Policy, then that's what we're trying to promote. We're going to, Eligar will talk more about the double issue that we're putting together. But in terms of if people want to participate, just keep in mind that we're at the very beginning stages of this, and so we're building it out. This is our interview that we're having, a launch party. And so anybody that wants to get involved, sure, send me an email, and then we'll keep it in mind as we create this.
Okay. Eligar, since you're on the other side, are you specifically looking for people with a specific talent or expertise, like aerospace engineering or something, or let's say astrophysics or, you know, launch vehicle design? Are you specifically looking for certain areas or talents or expertise?
Well, the area of astropolitics is so broad, you know, so I'm not looking for anything specific per se. I mean, you know, pretty much anything that's relevant to the space world, particularly looking at the softer side, you know, in comparison to engineering and science. And that would include things like management, development processes. You know, so there are some technical aspects to astropolitics, but there is no specific one area we're looking for. I mean, anyone who works in any capacity would be welcomed. You know, we're really broken down again, to remind your listeners, or they came on late, really broken down over three areas. So for those who just want to say, I know nothing about this, and I'm interested in essentially learning more about astropolitics, they can get involved in the advocacy part of it, and they can be interviewed as well in our documentary. Those that have research expertise and get involved in our research efforts and our research collaboration we want to promote. To the academic type, and they're looking to publish, you know, I am the editor of Astropolitics, and there are opportunities there, and we will be launching a call for a special issue on the state of astropolitics through the journal that will be published next year, including doing a follow-on workshop on the state of astropolitics for those that, you know, have the capacity to conduct academic research. And then lastly, on the education side, so for those who are interested in education or are educators, even including, you know, high school teachers and college and university teachers, we're looking to further develop educational courses hosted by the Institute and then also in partnership with colleges and universities and potentially even college-bound curriculum at the high school level.
Do they get credit for taking, what's it called, you know, classes to keep their certificates or their degrees or something current? I forget the terminology all of a sudden. Do they get any kind of credit, continuing education credit, for any of these classes?
Well, that's something, yeah, that I'm working on, because this course has been, you know, already approved through different universities that I taught at, and I taught in different forums with existing professional development organizations. So one thing that we're working on, that I'm working on, as we're building out the Institute, is to, you know, get sanctioned properly so people will receive continuing education professional development credits for the courses that we do offer.
Listeners, there's still time if you want to call rather than using email. 1-866-687-7223 is our cell phone number, our radio show toll-free number. Boy, this is one of those nights for me. 1-866-687-7223. You can, of course, continue sending email, drspace@thespaceshow.com. This is another one. Ralph is in Tucson, and he said, many of us are not at the IAC, but would welcome an opportunity talking to you or seeing you. Do you plan on going to other events? Eligar, I know you're in Colorado. What about the Space Foundation symposium that David promotes, since they're a sponsor to the space show? Do you attend that?
Yes, I'm a regular attendee of the Space Symposium in Colorado Springs, Colorado. I'm also actually a teacher liaison with the Space Foundation, so I've been selected as one of the leading teachers, educators in the country that's promoting the field of STEM and space-related education. So I have a really close connection, so I'm going to be working, I'm already working with the foundation to see how they may be interested in supporting the institute itself and what role we could play within the symposium as well as within the foundation. It has a very excellent track record, particularly at the K through 12 and high school levels for space-related education.
Do you think you'll be in their their big display area? You know, where all of the people go for their booths, their merchandise, their PR. Do you think you'll be in that section in the tent or whatever it's called?
In the exhibition, probably
yeah,
not.
Yeah, the exhibition center.
Since we're a nonprofit, we'll probably be more involved, with the foundation itself. Maybe leading. I'm going to be proposing to the foundation to lead a track on astropolitics at the symposium itself. So that's one of the proposals that I'm working on right now. I'm also going to be put forward in a proposal to the foundation to maybe have a space-related education, because they're very active with K-12 instructors, and I could lead a workshop or sessions on K-12 education related to astropolitics.
And if I may, Ralph, thank you for your question and thank you for listening. Eligar and I are launching at this event, but really I want you to keep in mind that this is just the beginning and you no way have to be attending the IAC to be involved. We're really passionate about enhancing U.S. space security through cooperation rather than competition, and we're going to be speaking with a lot of people that are international, because that's my background. And so it doesn't matter where you are. If you're interested in supporting us or watching us grow, please email me at star@astropoliticsinstitute.org. And the website is relatively new as well, but I think what I'll do is I'll add a link where, when we do get a newsletter or we do get new information, that you'll get a notice so that you can, know what's happening, and we'll keep you updated. So thank you again, Ralph, for listening and asking that question.
Yeah, it would be great if you had something that we could subscribe to where you keep people posted on what's happening.
Yes, that's what we'll do. We'll add it one thing at a time. So that's good. That's exciting.
Absolutely. Excuse me. Eligar, you're continuing your association with Astropolitics, the journal, which is a Taylor and Francis journal, right?
Yeah, correct. Right.
Okay, so I have to ask this, but I really don't know what the answer would be. Is this in any way a conflict of interest? Is it in any way associated with the Astropolitics Journal, since the names are really similar, and I'm assuming they've trademarked their name or copyrighted it or something? Do you have a formal relationship with the Astropolitics Journal, since you're the head honcho for that journal?
Right. Yeah, I've been doing the Astropolitics Journal now. I think I'm starting year 15. I wasn't the founder. Edward Doman, that was mentioned earlier by Layla, it was the founder, and I took over several years after he founded the journal, but I've been doing it now for quite a while. No, actually, this is concurrent. I mean, actually, I was fully transparent with the publisher. They fully supported our activities. They think it's a great idea, because one of the things we're promoting through our institute is the journal itself, because this and the journal Space Policy are the only two academic journals in the world that are devoted directly to the field of astropolitics. So this is actually a collaboration between the publisher who publishes the journal and my role as an editor there and the institute itself.
And so some of this work might end up being in the Astropolitics Journal?
Yes, correct. Yeah, and that's a great question, David. Yeah, so basically we'll be launching, one of the things we're going to launch at the party that kicks off the Institute next week is that there'll be a call for a special issue, papers for a special issue of Astropolitics. It will be published next year, probably springtime or summer, depending on when we get papers. Sometime the summer period, 2020. on the field of astropolitics. It'll be the Astropolitics Journal, special issue on the state of astropolitics, the ecosystem of space. We're going to cover a wide range of areas, everything from civil space to military space, commercial space, entrepreneurship in space, the role that space plays in global environmental issues and global environmental policy action, space development processes, as well as looking at what is it all about. You know, we have to consider that we are becoming, and we have been on this trajectory of becoming a space-faring species, and what is, and how is that going to transform us in many positive ways. The special issue then will be announced at the conference itself. So we're looking for experts to make contributions.
So I have a basic question for you. This is, by the way, Jane in Seattle. And she says, there has been some public sector news, in my opinion, not nearly enough, about our efforts to go back to the moon, either by 2024, 2028, or sometime in the near future. And different parts make it into the mainstream press, although I know from reading the space press that these subjects are covered all the time. There seems to be a huge gap in being able to get space understood by normal people outside the industry, or to understand why it might be important that we return to the moon. We're not hearing it come up so far as a presidential campaign issue. None of space seems to be coming up as a presidential campaign issue. So would something like your institute attempt to bridge between the industry people who really know space and know its value and importance, and the general public that seems shut out of this discussion in a big way? Are you going to be able to help bridge that gap so that the general public has a better and clearer understanding of the importance and value of space, including, for example, returning to the moon?
Jane, yes, exactly. Yeah. Thank you. Yes. That's exactly it. Jane, you got it. Exactly. There's the people that understand how important it is, and then there's everyone else. And it's like, why should we go to the moon? We were already there. Who cares? And it's like, no, this is really important. So thank you so much. That's exactly what we're trying to do, is bridge the gap, help people understand why this matters, how the certain aspects of space affect every single part of their lives every day, and they're not thinking about it because they don't know, because it's just kind of up there. So thank you. That's very insightful.
So a lot of your product then is going to be directed at the general public, then, I take it, correct?
On my side, so Eligar's side is more on terms of the education. He's doing more college-level post doc, you know, smarter people stuff, and we're looking just to, like, I'm looking kind of, I mean, I don't want to say dumb it down, but, like, simplify it a little bit so it's not so boring and sciencey and people can understand easier aspects about it, like, just for example, GPS, you know, and how that matters, just stuff like that. I think things that once it clicks, once I talk to people about this, they get so excited and they're really interested and they want to know more and they want to understand more. So I think, there's different aspects or different levels to the education. So, well, I'm trying to get younger people excited, high school students, you know, junior high, whatever. And Eligar's working at more of the academic journal level. So it's two different levels. You know, most people don't read Astropolitics, the journal, for fun. I do, because I'm a nerd, but, you know, we need to get more people that understand the pertinent parts of, like, how it matters in their life. If, you know, they wouldn't be able to look at Instagram every second, like, then maybe they would care.
Maybe. It's a big road to go down and a big task to take on. Listeners, we're still available if you want to call us, and we still have time, and I still keep pushing for toll-free calls, and I feel like I knock my head against the wall every week. But again, it is 1-866-687-7223. And then email, if you would like to continue sending us email, drspace@thespaceshow.com. So Ben, he says in his email, upstate New York, okay? And he says there's also lots of talk and some concern regarding China, their moon policy, their space policy. Are we in a Chinese United States space race? Do we have anything to be concerned about Chinese policy, culture, say getting back to the moon before we do, and the establishment of a U.S. Space Force? How do you address some of these issues with your institute, or do you address them?
I have a very small, I know Eligor's the expert, but just from what I've observed, the difference in Chinese space policy is they're looking at exploitation of space, and American space policy looks more at as something that's interesting or to explore. And I think that's something that Eligor and I, why this is so important, what we're talking about and trying to help people understand, because until the American public understands what other countries are doing and what we're not, then they can't get involved and ask for, you know, change. So thank you, Ben, for that question.
Eligor, your take on this.
Yeah, just to follow up real quickly. Yeah, thank you, Lila, for that insight. No, thanks, Ben. That's a great question. Yeah, I think, Ben, I'd like to talk to you more because you really understand the nature of what's going on very, very well. Actually, I just finished peer reviewing an article that's going to be published in the forthcoming issue of Astropolitics on what many, many scholars are beginning already to characterize as the second space race. Obviously, we had the first big space race, you know, at the dawn of the space age back in the 1950s with the launch of Sputnik between the United States and the former Soviet Union during the Cold War, and now people are characterizing this emergent second space race that's really begun between the United States and China, and it's really a race to the moon. Who's going to get to the moon first? Who's going to get the access and control of Earth-Moon space region, which really allows you to access all the orbital domains around Earth? So it's considered very militarily important, strategic, as well as access to lunar resources. And there is this emergent competition going on between the United States and China. It's one of the reasons why the Trump administration and NASA has come on board to accelerate the ability to get to the moon in very short order. Right now, the intent is to be there within the next 4 to 5 years, by around 2024. And it's a very, very interesting competition. And one thing that we're addressing these issues directly. I mean, the Astropolitics Journal is addressing these issues. Scholars are addressing these issues. This is part and parcel of some of the understanding we want to bring to the general public, as well as the experts out there to get their take on what's going on and to address it in a positive way. I mean, one of the goals is to make sure that we have the right governance regimes, we have the right legal regimes, and the right political approaches that are more collaborative, where everybody can benefit from the use of the space. We clearly are going to be advocating collaboration and cooperation in such activities, and really want to try to mitigate the aspects of this emerging space race, and from it becoming, too much in the realm of exploiting versus collaborating, as Lila mentioned.
What do you think of the Space Force idea?
Well, the Space Force, I think that's been largely mischaracterized. I've been in the world working with Air Force space most of my academic career. I was going to say political career. I haven't had much of a political career, but academic career. I've been working very, very close, even was for a while. I was at the Air Force Academy. I worked there with the Center for Space and Defense Studies. I've done work with Air Force Space Command. The Space Force is really more a reorganization. There's been a lot of talk for many, many years from many, many folks within the Air Force who felt that having the Air Force run the military space program and provide that to the other branches of the military was a conflict of interest for the Air Force itself. I mean, the Air Force has other institutional purposes, primarily air, to be an Air Force. It also runs the Missile Force of the United States and the Global Strike Force of the United States with nuclear missiles. And when it took on the space mission, it really began to conflict with its other missions. And the Air Force has struggled for many, many years with institutional conflict, career development conflict. The Space Force really is about consolidating that. The space has become so critical. Every general will tell you today in the Air Force that the U.S. military is dependent on space, on the use of space. as a fighting force, as a war fighting force, and as having a presence, a very effective presence throughout the world. And because of that, there was a strong organizational push for many, many years to get the Space Force out of the Air Force into its own branch of the military. So it's really more about those dynamics and aspects. It's really not, you know, nothing has changed in terms of thinking about the value of space or military space policy per se.
Eligar, and Layla as well, in the, I'm going to say about the last 7 years. Well, the space shuttle's coming up on 19 years. And for the majority of this, commercial space has been talked about, and it's not really been there except for the big traditional aerospace companies like Boeing and Lockheed, which are of course commercial companies, because for the most part the U.S. doesn't have nationalized businesses or national businesses. So, but this has really changed over the last maybe 5 to 7, maybe even a little bit longer. So fields like imaging and satellites, small satellite, you know, nanosat, CubeSat, the SmallSat conference, for example, in Utah now attracts 5,000 people. When I first started attending, if it attracted 250 or 300 people, it would be really wildly successful. So many startups have come about. Most of them make money through merger and acquisition. Some of them are starting to show returns on their services. And then, of course, you've got the biggies that are involved, like SpaceX and Virgin, to probably a little bit of a lesser degree, and Blue Origin. So where does the Institute fit with pure entrepreneurism? So you can't say commercial, because we've always had the commercial side. You know, Loral was commercial before it went to Canada. You know, Boeing, Lockheed, you know, ATK before it merged out. Those are all commercial companies. But now commercial is something very, very different. And a very big part of it is truly bootstrap entrepreneurial activity. And some of it is really big business, like SpaceX and Blue Origin. So where do you guys how do you deal with the entrepreneurial from the small little startup that may be taking place in a warehouse someplace to the really big startup like SpaceX, for example?
Well, that's a great question, David. And I think it's very, very important. I think we've seen over time what I would call is the privatization of space, you know, with the entrepreneurial world, you know, entrepreneurship in aerospace. So I'm actually, over the last number of years, I've been involved in the ecosystem of entrepreneurship, and I've developed mentorship, business development relationship with business incubators, with the University of Colorado Boulder here, which is very active in the area. It actually has one of the leading aerospace engineering programs in the entire country, if not the world. And it's through these relationships that I'm looking to bring the Institute on board in a way to help those that are looking to get into the entrepreneurship of space as startups, to provide mentorship, to provide business development expertise, and as well as exposure to capital, you know, to really develop their businesses. So we want to become, in a way, kind of a forum that is an accelerator or a business development model forum or a mentorship forum. I'm kind of working through the elements of that right now, and I'm hoping to bring some of my experiences working in the ecosystem of entrepreneurship to the Institute to allow for really incubating entrepreneurial activity in aerospace.
Layla, how do you see it from the advocacy side?
Thank you for that. I want to repeat to everybody that's listening that we're going, Eligar and I are launching the Astropolitics Institute next Tuesday at 8 a.m. at the Henley Park Hotel in Washington, D.C., and we'll be at the International Astronautical Congress promoting the event all day on Monday the 21st. If you want to find us online, you can astropoliticsinstitute.org.
Eligar, are you still there, or did you drop the phone?
No, I'm here.
Okay, I heard a strange noise, so...
Oh.
Somebody's
okay.
Got call waiting. Maybe that's what it is.
I don't know. So in terms of the competition or, you know, privatization of space. That was one of the initial questions that I was asking last year, which led me to Dr. Dolman's book, Astropolitique. I think it's really interesting, the governance of space, that the Outer Space Treaty, you already know this is like really kindergarten stuff for you, but I think for our listeners who don't, it was enacted in 1967, and that's the basis of international space law, and that there's been strong support to keep space peaceful and ownership free, and that this idea of that space is to remain free from national appropriation by claim of sovereignty, that these constraints are part of the big picture questions that Eligar and I are asking, because just from a very simple point of view, those companies have a lot of money and they're doing really cool things, but I'm interested in the average American person getting the benefits of some of the resources of space. And if we're kind of prevented from that in some way, I think that those are some of the cooler, you know, questions of when people say, well, why does this matter to me? How does it affect me? Well, I don't know, companies making a lot of money and you're kind of like left out here just looking at pictures that are pretty. So I think that leads to bigger questions that we're both, you know, interested in trying to address. How does it affect every citizen? And also that we really want to focus on space and our work in the international community, trying to lift up, you know, newer players in the game, instead of just focusing on what everybody goes immediately to, you know, China and that question. But there's Eligar, I think you were saying last week that you have friends in Pakistan or, you know, different places all over the world. We really want to make this a global institute.
You know, you talk about space for everybody, but keep in mind the companies like SpaceX and Blue are taking the risk and investing the money, and the average person is not.
So
one cannot overlook that. But on the other hand, what SpaceX does benefits everybody, and if they don't have everybody as a downstream customer, they're not going to have any business. So,
right.
You know, when they sell a launch to put a satellite up there, the average person is buying time on that satellite through their cable system or through whatever, you know, their internet or, you know, mm-hmm. that's the ultimate customer. So it's not so clean and clear cut that these guys have all the money and you want to make sure that the average person gets a benefit, because they have instant communication around the world. They have Facebook, they have Instagram, they have all their little toys that have come about
yeah.
because somebody made the investment in that and took the risk.
Absolutely. I think that what we're trying to do is just help shine a light on the way things work now and if this is the best system, just to help educate people more.
And to that real quickly, David, because I think
yes.
that's a really important point, you know, that Lila's been talking about, and also your question is really a good one. I mean, and it kind of relates back in some ways to what I was talking about earlier, that I want to begin to offer opportunities for those that are looking to get into entrepreneurship. Well, why not do entrepreneurship that's aerospace related? Maybe even something that's astropolitics related. And we want to be an institute there to support, you know, the mentor and provide business development to individuals like that want to take on entrepreneurial activities related to aerospace. So we're looking to promote, you know, and to bring the entrepreneurship to the aerospace world that is really kind of at a very, I would say, beginning level in many, many ways.
Listeners, we're pretty much at the top of the hour. If you want to get another email in or finally use the phone, 1-866-687-7223, you really need to hurry up. Guys, what should we have talked about regarding your new institute and what you're doing that for whatever reason we have not yet talked about it, or we've forgotten it or omitted it, or we should have talked about it? What, this is your chance to say what we forgot to say or didn't get to say for whatever reason.
I want to say something very quickly about what the institute is focusing on in terms of space and global environmental change. It's a kind of a really buzzy thing we hear all the time about the environment and the climate protests. And while I'm not an expert in the scientific part of what's happening up there, I do know that space can be utilized to address some of these issues. And in terms of what's happening right now, I don't know if you all read, Jane Fonda was arrested during a climate protest outside the U.S. Capitol. And I think she said that she was going to be arrested every week, every Friday for the rest of the year. So we're reading about all these kind of things, and I think that I love Jane Fonda being arrested, you know, for climate change, awesome. But if we're hoping to educate people on what are some other things that may be out there that they don't know about, so Eligar, maybe you can help talk about what are some of the things going on in terms of the environmental change in 1 minute or less. No, I know it's a really broad subject. I'm just saying that
let me
usually think of space in that way,
Eligar,
in that context.
Eligar, before you go, this always troubles me with Hollywood starlets and people with big names and in the media. Why should I care whether Jane Fonda is arrested or not for climate change or for safe tires or for anything she wants to protest? Why should I give a damn about Jane Fonda? I like her movies. There's no doubt about that. I've gotten great hours of entertainment from her and her family, okay, all the way to Daddy Henry and her late brother.
Right.
And so I've got no bones with her other than I was in the military during Vietnam, and I got a lot of bones about her in Vietnam. But why should I care about her or any of these big celebrity names that want to protest this or that?
Because if Jane Fonda knew about some of the things that are possible up in space or what's happening, she can use that forum of not just getting arrested for global climate change, but for talking about it. And so I think it's kind of like it goes hand in hand. She has the public, and here I'm reading this. It was in the New York Times, so it's out there, right?
Right.
And what we're doing is not out there. And so what I'm trying to do is just be a bridge to help say, okay, you want to get arrested for this? Cool. Here are some other things that you could say or talk about that nobody knows about.
Okay.
So she's in front of the media and we're not. So there's that.
You can say, yes, none of the three of us are in front of that kind of media. You're 100%
right.
As much as I wish that were different, that is a fact of life. I have no argument with you on that. Okay, Eligar,
right.
Sorry for stepping on you. What is it that you were going to say?
Oh, no problem. I think it was a great discussion there. No, I think just some final words, you know, just to add on and maybe broaden out a little where Lila started is, you know, ultimately, I think, you know, our very future really depends on evolving as a space-faring species. And I think we need to understand that, bring that attention to the public. The Earth is a finite system. You know, global climate change or not, you know, even if global climate change is not existing, as a result of human causes, we still need to become a space-faring species, and that's really very, very important. That's something we're strongly advocating, that our very future in all ways, in terms of resources and energy, innovation, technology development, really lies in becoming the space-faring species, you know, and eventually extending humanity beyond planet Earth itself as well. And I think that's very, very critical. And the more that we can bring attention to that, to the general public, you know, and extend that beyond the aerospace community that is really more in the know on that, there's going to be a lot of value. And that implies that we need to address all these astropolitical issues. And we as an institute are doing that. You know, we need to address the governance issues. We need to address the political issues, the socio-economic, the socio-political issues in terms of how are we going to become a space-faring species and how are we going to interact and live in the space environment and bring the benefits back to Earth so we can prosper and sustainably develop as a human species far into the future.
Couldn't agree more with you, Eligar. And now I have a couple of suggestions for you. So, Layla, it sounds to me like you're in charge of the website. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. So it would be really cool and very human. You'd make human connections. That's what I'm looking at. If at your big launch event, you took a lot of photos of what was going on and people, iPhone photos are fine, and put a page up for your launch page, you know, and
people
is posting.
And film.
Yeah, well, but put some individuals up, that some individual pictures up, you know, toasting the champagne toast. But this make it really human. And if they want to give a little statement, fine. If not, you should be able to say, this is Eligar and Joe Blow and Carolyn Blow and Layla, and, you know, let people identify on the human side of that, okay? And I think that'd be a really cool page or two.
Yeah.
And you really should have some kind of quarterly or something newsletter that people can subscribe to, where you can give us updates if you get a hold of our email address. And you can also do downstream marketing to us as well.
Thank you. Yeah, we as I said, we are, it's just me. We're building it all up. We do want to do a newsletter or some kind of blog post, and we are going to be taking pictures at the launch party. If y'all haven't heard, we've repeated it a million times, but I'll say it one more time. We're going to be at the Henley Park Hotel, 22nd of October, 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. That's at 926 Massachusetts Avenue in Washington, D.C. What are we doing there? We're going to be drinking copious amounts of champagne at the launch. No, I'm kidding. We're doing a toast, and then we have to do a lot of smart people stuff, and we're there for the IAC, and we're going to have a lot of fun. We're really excited about this. Whoever joins us, they're going to have a chance to make connections with other experts and learn about the Institute and get published. And so we're working on a lot of really cool things. And if we're going to be signing off soon, I want to thank you for hosting us and our people who ask questions, Todd, Ralph, Jane, and Ben. Thank you for being active listeners and helping us. This is our kind of our mini launch, our soft launch. So thank you so much for listening and asking great questions.
Final question just came in, and I'm gonna direct it to you, Layla, since you're the one who actually brought this up. Linda's in Dallas, Texas, and she said, any chance Jane Fonda will be at your champagne toast?
No. I wish.
Get to work on it. Layla, you're a Harvard student. Get to work on it.
You know, I do know people that know her and have worked with her, and they say that she's absolutely breathtaking and lovely and wonderful. So we'll work on that, Linda.
And then post her damn picture so we can all see that Jane Fonda got there and she wasn't arrested while she was at your event.
Or maybe she can get arrested at the launch event. That would be cool.
No, you don't want that. But you could say Jane Fonda out on bail. You could do that.
Yeah, we're going to work on that. That's funny. Thank you, Linda.
Okay, and I will hope to talk to you both down the road and get your progress reports. I wish I was going to be there. It would be a lot of fun. And I wish you the best of luck with your rollout.
Yeah, no, thank you.
I want to say good night to Namrata Goswami. She was a guest of yours, and she's a friend of mine.
Oh, she's terrific. She's one of the best guests I've ever had.
She's so polished, and she's brilliant. And then
she is absolutely brilliant.
Peter Gerritsen, love him, and I want to say hello to
Peter too. Absolutely. But Dr. Goswami's become one of my absolute all-time favorite guests. She's really bright.
She wished me luck, and she's so bright, and she's so polished, and she just has a great bubbly personality. So hello to her, and thank you for coaching me on how to navigate this interview. And I just want to say good night to Lennon, Colette, Atticus, Archer, John, Isabel, and Fiona. Those are all of my kids.
Any pets in that combination?
No pets with
seven children.
Yes, between my husband and I, we have seven children.
Wow, and no dogs or cats, not even a bird.
No, we can't. I can't pick up any poop of anything. It's just the kids.
Okay, it's been a lot of fun and very educational and very informative. And again, I wish all of you the best. And we will stay in touch. And Eligar, I'll look for you to keep me posted. And one of these days I'll get back to doing something with Astropolitics for you. So,
thank you as well. No, thank you for having us on the show and hosting this.
And I'll get it.
Enjoy the conversation.
I'll probably have it playing tonight, and the archive summary will be posted later tomorrow after my Friday morning space show. But the program will be playing late tonight, California time, and podcasting. And then I'll send you a note and tell you where it is. But it'll be up and running tonight so people can hear it if they're up all night
Thank
or early
so
in
much.
The morning.
This has been really fun. I really appreciate it. It's been really fantastic. We've been working on this for a while, so it's been nice to finally talk about it with someone. So thank
yeah,
you.
And it's been fun and good to meet you too, Layla. And travel safely, and I look forward to the next time we get an opportunity to talk down the road.
Okay.
Thank you, David.
Listeners, that's it. So Jose is with us tomorrow for Calius Foundation. And then we have our antimatter propulsion chap is with us on Sunday, Dr. Gerald Jackson. Those of you that were at ISDC might have seen him. Monday, Dr. Lopez. Hold on. Okay, Dr. Lopez is with us. And remember, Dr. Lopez wrote the paper regarding the opposite view of planetary protection that we have talked about. And he is with us Monday at 7 p.m. California time. So you will definitely want to hear Jose Lopez in person on the space show about his planetary protection policy, which, as I said, is 180 degrees away from traditional planetary protection. Everybody have a great rest of the evening, a good weekend coming up. Thanks to Eligar and Layla. They're already off the telephone, but we thank them very much. Good night from Eligar, Layla, and David. Everybody keep looking up.